Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road later this hour. Teron Davenport will be with us at 8 o'clock. We'll look ahead to the Titans and the Colts with him. Taking your thoughts on the Titans. Blake Bedingfield at PaulKuharski.com talking about how, looking ahead, the Titans should start planning for the trading deadline and selling off basically anybody that he says is not going to be producers when Ward hits his prime, which he believes is 2 years away. So taking your thoughts on that. Joe, another thing that Bedingfield says, he goes through a section here about what he feels good about, what he doesn't feel good about. And there's a lot more about what he doesn't feel good about than what he feels good about right now with the Tennessee Titans. I want to hit on a couple of them with you. I want to start on this one. He says, Femi Oladejo has zero presence as a pass rusher. No impact at all. That's all he said about Femi Oladejo. Zero presence as a pass rusher. No impact at all. We've talked a lot about him. I understand he's a project. He's a second-round pick, and you're hoping here in a couple years he's a great player for you. To me, it is very discouraging to have somebody who's got a background in scouting and knows what this process looks like to look at Oladejo out there and come away with zero presence as a pass rusher.
Like nothing else to say. It's just zero.
So what do you make of that? And how long do you give this before you start looking at the Oladejo pick and it's fair to just say, what the heck were you guys doing with that pick?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because, you know, you figure you're not going to have consistency. You're going to have, you know, you're going to have some bad moments, right? Maybe whatever. You look like a rookie out there. When he was drafted, the word project was immediately, you know, was that accompanied the draft pick. So, okay, you figure you're not going to have some guy who comes in and is consistent, is a force, he gets 12 sacks as a rookie. But not like nothing? Like what does that mean? Like how do you go from, I'm sure there's some examples, but how do you go from nothing to all of a sudden being a difference maker who would warrant a second round pick? It just, it's concerning. And I don't know the answer to your question, but I would say that, like, if we go through this entire year and there's just nothing, I mean, that can't be good. You know, the Kevin Dodd thing was multiple years of, and again, that wasn't like the same sort of thing. It wasn't a project, but it was just very underwhelming and disappointing, and it took, you know, multiple years, and then finally it was just like, yeah, the guy can't play.
Yeah.
You know, again, there's a difference here in switching positions to edge, but yeah, you gotta make some impact, right? You gotta, as the season goes on, if you gotta be able to show some improvement and show that you belong in an NFL field.
It's concerning to me. I'm with you. Like, I could live with you taking a guy in the second round that's a project as an edge rusher and him not playing a whole lot because, number one, you've got some edge rushers in front of him that you feel good about and maybe not seeing a lot of production from him that way. What is really concerning to me is, like, there's no edge rushers on this team. Like, Draymond Jones and Arden Key are replacement-level players. You took a guy in the second round that just started playing the position, which on its own is fine. Like, that's okay. But I look at it and I just think that if he can't show you anything right now, like look, maybe the Titans' evaluation of him is different than what Bedingfield says. But, like, having watched them play the first couple of weeks, I can't say I notice a whole lot when Oladejo's on the field, which is not good. Like, if there's nothing that you're seeing out there that says, oh, we feel good about that, like, isn't that a big problem? Like, even if he is the quote-unquote project, like, you took him in the second round He should be showing you something.
Yeah.
Now, even if it's not perfect.
A project should still flash and still be like, oh, okay. Yeah, project, not refined, not, you know, there's a lot to work on technique-wise and consistency, but, oh, man, look, did you see that? Just that one speed rush or whatever. I mean, yeah, there should be some impact. You don't want to notice offensive linemen. You don't want to notice corners, typically. You don't want to notice officials. You want to notice your edge rushers. Like you want to notice them. You want to at least see, you know, see them need to be chipped at times. See them pressing a tackle and you know, making life hard for him. Even if he doesn't get to the quarterback. And so far, it's just like, is he on the field? I don't know. Was he on the field last series? I don't know.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
Yeah, Trevor says, I get they drafted for traits and what he could turn into. But maybe draft some dudes who've had success in college before taking flyers. Risky pick to come out of the gate for Mike Borgonzi. This is from Trevor.
Yeah. And again, it's like you look at this draft class from the offensive perspective, and it seems like they – I mean, I think both of those fourth round receivers look pretty good for fourth rounders. You know, Helm seems like a solid pick. You know, Cam's the entire draft, right, obviously.
Yep.
But, yeah, that second round is so valuable. And I agree, you need someone – you should have a starter in the second round. Even if you're a good team, you should have a starter in the second round. And if not a starter, like if you're a really, really good team and maybe it's a little bit of a luxury pick, fine. But it's still someone who contributes and makes a difference in the second round. And it is – I go back to the Dodd comparison – the one thing about him was he had really done little in college, and then that year at Clemson in 2015, he had, like, I think it was – especially I think in the playoff, he went nuts. He had, like, some huge sacks. And it was a little bit of kind of like – well, obviously, it turned out to be fool's gold. He wasn't a consistent – but at least that was something.
Right.
You know? I mean, this is – yeah, traits. Again, the whole idea is you got a value pick that – he's actually going to be better than some of these guys who have had all this production because his ceiling is over here. And look, it's two games into his rookie season, so what is it possible that's how it turns out? Sure, it is. But
it's not off to a good start.
It's not off to a good start. You want to see something, and we're not seeing anything.
Well, and you know, another thing that the Bedingfield touched on was exactly what we've been talking about this week. And that is Bill Callahan, like the decisions with personnel, right? You know, here we are talking about Dan Moore 2 weeks in. You know, Lathan goes down, and you're talking about Udo in his place and John Aduko back in there. And it's just not changing his mind, waffling back and forth between those two. It's just Bill Callahan has had a great career to this point. It has not gone well for him in a Tennessee Titans outfit to this point.
No.
And Bedingfield basically just lays out everything we've talked about this week. From Leroy Watson to Zadik Charles to Nicholas Petitfrere, the whole thing. Like, it's just not been good.
No. So, something needs to change for somebody. For these Tennessee Titans. Corey on the text line, driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com, says, if the Titans get rid of all these players, what coach is going to want that job? Then he says a lot of other stuff. Corey, I mean, this is you draft people. You sign people. I mean, look, the one player of all the players we're talking about where another coach would be like, ooh, they traded Simmons? Boy, that guy's –
Yeah.
But, I mean, you think some coach would be like, ooh, I don't know, a 30-something Calvin Ridley? I'm not touching that job. I mean, come on. I mean, the point is you get picks and you get more good young players in there. Now, you have to make good picks, but, again, that's what the people are paid to do here, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we can fire everybody all over again if you want. I promise you that although if a coach had the Titans job and other jobs lined up, he might not have the Titans job at the top of his list. They'll get a coach. They'll get a coach who wants to be an NFL head coach because there's 32 of those jobs.
615-737-1025. Our phone number. Going to shift into some college football coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. This Sunday, the NFL game of the week on 94.9 The Fan is the Cowboys taking on the Bears at 325. NFL game of the week presented by Circa Sportsbook Kentucky and Macero in 12 South. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up later this hour. Taking your thoughts in the meantime, 615-737-1025. Joe, when you look at the college football schedule before the year, I don't know that you looked at week four and said, that's the one I'm circling. It's going to be awesome. Like, we know how good the first week of college football was on paper. Some of those games lived up to it. Some of it, frankly, did not. But pretty good weekend to open things up here. And now here we are with week four, and there's some good games going up this weekend. You know, Auburn, Oklahoma, I'm looking forward to that. You've got Utah and Texas Tech, which I know you're very excited about. Indiana, Illinois, got some great games coming up this weekend. And you've come out with a piece on The Athletic talking about a word that, frankly, I don't know that we've ever been able to really use all that much in college football, but maybe now are we starting to shift in that direction. What word am I talking about, Joe?
Well, David Ubbin used the word this week, which is part of why I wrote this. He said, parity is here in college football. And I said, man, that's a big statement now. You know, so the P word is, I don't think it's been anywhere near college football. I'm not sure I'm comfortable using it yet. But see, you just mentioned those games. So this weekend, for the first time, we have three ranked games between conference rivals. So you got three conference games. Again, do we care about conference games? Well, I mean, conference championships still matter. So from that perspective, you could say this is the best week since week one. We all know week one was insane. But I think more people would say last week was a much better week, right? I mean, Georgia-Tennessee. I mean, I'm not talking about the quality of the games. I'm talking about going into the weekend because those are bigger brand names. I mean, who gets excited about when you say Indiana-Illinois? Woo! That's a big one in the Big Ten. Like they seriously never, ever play – football games against each other that matter at all.
Yep.
Ever. And it is. It's number 9 against 9. It's a huge game. So then you look at that and you look at, again, Texas Tech. We know what they've done, right? They've gone out there and they just say, hey, we'll just pay double what everybody else is, and we're just gonna load up. You know, Utah has been a good program, but it's not like top brand name. And then, you know, Auburn, Oklahoma, you know, Auburn is, you know, little brother, if you will, in the state of Alabama. Sorry to all the Auburn fans, but, I mean, that's, you know, right? I mean, that's – Alabama fans will tell you that anyway. I mean, it's the number 2 team in the state of Alabama. I know well what it is to, you know, cover a number 2 team in a state, you know. Like it or not, more people like the other team. So, it's – I think this week is a good example of, do we have parity? So what is parity? NFL parity, that'll never happen unless college football just completely becomes the NFL.
There's too many teams.
And you
cut.
Yeah, exactly. But so I'll actually employ. Now I quoted an AD in this story who said, I wouldn't use the P word, I'd use the V word. It's volatility. And I think that is a good point. In other words, you know, essentially, so he says quarterback's always been the most important position, so you can't keep a number 2 around, right? And so then you have these overhyped transfers. If they fail, you don't have options. So volatility at the top means hope at the bottom. And the point he brought up was, look at Vanderbilt, right? Vanderbilt's going to be a great example for everybody who believes there's parity or there's some degree of parity. So I also asked a GM in college football and said, yes, I actually think that it's parity. So this is his point. The Bamas of the world can't put their third-year 5-star into the lineup now, right?
Yeah.
Now it might be their first-year 5-star, but there's a big difference between the two. And then, of course, you mentioned the Texas Techs that are diluting the talent with money. So parity, I guess it just depends on – it's semantics, right? It's like it will not be parity that you'll find in a professional league with a salary cap. Yeah, it just, that's not the case. But I think there's more hope for more programs that, you know, coach, quarterback, money. If you can figure those out, right now Vanderbilt got Clark Lee doing a great job. Obviously they got the quarterback and they got people who are successful who are willing to invest in the program. If you can do that, you don't have to be Georgia, Ohio State, Penn State, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's good.
Yeah.
So I guess it just kind of – it depends on if you really believe that word applies.
I think it depends on how you're viewing parity. Because in the regular season, I think it's undeniable, right? Like, I think there's more parity. There's an opportunity to change your roster quicker than ever before. I mean, you can just – I mean, look at Texas Tech. Look what they did. Like, if you're bad one year, that doesn't necessarily mean you have to be bad the next year based on your roster and the flexibility of the transfer portal. Is it going to actually pay off in parity in the postseason? That's what I'm waiting to see, and that's where I have my doubts. Like, I mean, the Final Four last year in the college football playoff was Texas, Ohio State, Penn State, Notre Dame. I mean, that ain't parity. Like, that's the same type of programs that it's always been, right? Like, Georgia was right there in it as well. So what's that going to look like this year? I mean, look, those teams, number one, they have the tradition. They have the money. They have the resources. And most of them have a coaching staff that you look at and like, yeah, they could put me in the NFL. So, like, there's all those things aren't going away. So I'm interested to see this year in the college football playoff. Like, is there a team that can make a run, like, to get up to where it's not Ohio State and Georgia in the national championship game? Like, how much parity is there really? How limited is it once the playoff comes around? And the other thing is this, like, simple math would just tell you, like, the days – I'm not going to say they're over and that we're not going to see an undefeated national champion ever again, but you just have to play more games now, right? Like, when you have a 12-team playoff and they're going to 16, like, you're playing more games. So, like, you're probably not going to see that many undefeated national champions again, based on the way the college football is headed right now. So that by itself would create more parity.
Yeah, that's one thing I said in the piece was, how about a champion that doesn't make the blue chip list?
Exactly.
So that's Bud Elliott, who works for 24/7 Sports. He came up with that a long time ago. And so far, every team that has won it all has hit that benchmark, which is basically it's just that of your last four classes, you have to have more 4 and 5 stars on your roster than you do 2 and 3 stars. So, like, for example, the most talented team in college football this year, Alabama Crimson Tide, 89% of the last four classes, either 4 or 5 stars. And then I think Ohio State is, like, right there with them, the top two. Getting down to Tennessee now qualifies, by the way. At the bottom of that list, like 54%, I think it's Tennessee and Florida State are the bottom of the 18 teams. So can a team like that win it? Now, TCU did play for the national championship. Now, they got beat 1-0, but they beat Michigan in the semifinal. They did get to the title game. So, I mean, I think we'll have that. I think that at some point, you know, you're in a tournament and we'll have that, but we'll see. It's like, I think when you play that many games, to your point, that's where depth does come into play.
Yeah.
But that's where the edge is not what it was. Like this GM saying, it's like, you know, Alabama, I mean, they seriously used to have kids, 5-star kids who would wait 2 years.
Sure.
And then, my turn to, I'll start now as a junior and I'll be drafted in the first round.
Right.
After my 1 year of starting at Alabama. And that's just not, they're going somewhere else to start earlier and get paid more. So that is where I think a team like a surprise team that has some luck, stays healthy, and gets that deep into the thing could break into the club.
Well, this is, you know, we spend so much time in the college football offseason talking about all these things that are wrong with college football, right? And look, you're not going to find many people that are more mad about some of the things going on in college football than I am. And then, Joe, you get to Saturday, and it's like, hey, this is pretty great, man. Like, it's pretty awesome out here. And, you know, I hate the playoff system. I don't like the 12-team playoff. I'm going to hate it even more when they go to 16. But guess who's going to be watching when they go to 16? Right here. That's what I do. So, like, it's just another reminder of, like, there are the parity conversation. It's hard to, like, what Vanderbilt's doing right now is awesome. Like, it's fun to watch. Well, you know, what – I mean, Illinois's got the number 9 team in the country. Like, I would have never thought that would be the case. So there are some parts about it and like the landscape of modern day college football that do make it pretty interesting in the regular season. Like I can't deny that.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, in the old days you would have, it's obviously different. Like you could have these teams that could get old and you'd have a, like Georgia Tech you know, Bobby Ross in 1990, Georgia Tech, you know, splits the national title with Colorado, like kind of out of nowhere. You know, you'd have that here and there. But, yeah, for the most part, it's been the usual. And, you know, you have a program that can rise up and kind of just out of nowhere become a power like Miami did in the 80s. So, I mean, the things like that happen. But now it's like year to year it can vary widely and teams can come out of nowhere, which I mean, I think it's fun.
Yep. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll take your thoughts on parity in college football. Does it exist? Plus, a team here locally that I think we're going to find out a lot about tomorrow that maybe you wouldn't otherwise think so if you just looked at the matchup on paper. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. DVD with Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan will be broadcasting live at the all-new Circa Sportsbook Kentucky in the Mint Gaming Hall this Monday prior to the Monday Night Football game. Head on up there, watch the Lions and the Ravens, plus ask about Circa's giveaway of a trip to Las Vegas for the Titans-Raiders game, which is coming up in October. We'll have the Rex Rate with Joe Rexroad here in just a few minutes at 7:45. Teron Davenport will be with us at 8 o'clock. Having a discussion on college football, and is there more and more parity that is coming in college football with the changes to NIL, with the transfer portal, all these things. You know, Joe, I said the postseason, it's going to be interesting to see what that looks like and if there's more teams that can break through in the college football playoff and create some matchups that aren't your normal type matchups when you get into the semifinals, when you get into the final. I think you can look at it from a couple of different areas. Number one, like I said, it's easier if you're a team that is not a traditional power to go out there and get some more talent via the transfer portal. So that could help you when it comes to the college football playoff. As I also said, though, like there are more games. Like there's more games you got to get through. So more of an opportunity for those traditional powers to just eventually suffocate you if you're one of those teams, right? Like, you know, I think Washington's a good example a couple years ago. Great team. Kalen DeBoer, right? You had Michael Penix. They looked really good. They got to the national championship game. But when you get to the playoffs, 4-team playoffs. You had to win one game to get to the national championship game. It's just harder to get there now because you've got more games. So I wonder what that's going to do to those teams like a Washington that nobody would say is a traditional power. Not impossible to get in the playoff. Easier to get in the playoff. Harder to advance all the way through the playoff now. So I'm interested to see how that plays out.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like you had we're talking about the volatility, the loss of depth. You know, these top teams don't have just waves of great backups. But it doesn't mean that, like, you know, like if you have a less traditional power, a quote-unquote weaker team, maybe they have a few a quarterback that changes the math like Penix did. They had tremendous receivers too, Roman Dunze and those guys. So you assume their depth might even be more challenged, right, than like the team that brings in 4 and 5 stars as 80% of their recruiting class each year. So then the attrition hits them even more, right, in theory. So, yeah, I mean, I guess you could look at it and say you're just going to – some of those teams are still built more. The top teams are still built more for a run like that. So it's going to be hard. But I still feel like we'll see someone sneak in and make a run, and it's probably going to have to do with the quarterback position more than anything.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. Joe, there's one team this weekend that you look at on paper here locally, and it's like, oh, great. What a matchup. Like Tennessee and Vanderbilt both. Like Tennessee's a 39.5-point favorite against UAB, and Vanderbilt's 27.5-point favorite against Georgia State. So, you know, after a weekend last week where it was like, yes, Tennessee, Georgia, and yes, Vanderbilt, South Carolina, it kind of feels like two duds for them this weekend, and it probably will be. I do think from the Vanderbilt perspective, though, like we could learn a little something about them because I go back to last year, and one of the most inexplicable results of the entire season was Vanderbilt losing to Georgia State. It just made no sense at the time. Well, the way both teams went after that, it made no sense in the future. Like, so I understand Vanderbilt is going to have that circled. It's at home this year. they're going to be determined to not let that happen again. But can you get not even just the Georgia State game? Can you get through these next two games if you're Vanderbilt and handle your business? Not even by just winning the game. Can you get out there and dominate these next two games, Georgia State and Utah State, before you've got Alabama coming up on the road? If they do that, I think that's a really good sign for this group. Because, last year they talked about it was a total lapse against Georgia State. This team can't do that, and I'm interested to see, if they go out there and they just boat race Georgia State and Utah State in their next two games. If I'm a Vanderbilt fan, I'm looking at that and I'm saying, yeah, I realize the quality of competition is not great there, but your team handling business in a way that they should handle business is a good sign that last year's team did not do.
Exactly. I think that's as much a – obviously the big wins over the big teams are, and being able to compete in the SEC, all that stuff, but just being able to crush teams like that is a big – things are different outcome. This is more confirmation that things are different. And I'm interested to see the crowds. Again, how many Vanderbilt football fans, if you're a Vanderbilt football fan, first of all, how many times over the years have you had a player that you were this excited to see play? Right. And also the stadium has changed a lot, and it's you feel you can go in, all these other teams, Tennessee fans are gonna tailgate and have a fun day, and they're gonna just, hey, let's blow out UAB and let's get some of the young guys in there and see some of the freshmen play. I'm with Kaharski. It seems ridiculous, right, when you take kind of step back and say, why do these games happen? But they do, and I don't see that changing. I don't see it completely going away. I think it could be reduced a little bit. But if you're a Vanderbilt fan and you just feel like, hey, we can just have a fun day, go tailgate, we're going to blow this team out, we're going to see some of our young players or some of our backups play, and yay, go home. Vanderbilt white-knuckling it against any team is usually what you're experiencing as a Vanderbilt fan.
Yeah, it's hard to look back at the Georgia State game last year if you're a Vanderbilt fan and just be devastated by it because of what happened after that, right? You took down Alabama. So, obviously, it ended up being fine and working out for you last year. But, look, we had a conversation on the show the other day, and by the way, we're not the only ones, about Vanderbilt potentially at the end of the year being in contention for a college football playoff spot, right? Now, it's really early, and there's a lot of football left to be played. But what a shame it would be if you end up having a pretty good season in the SEC and you screw around with Utah State or Georgia State. I don't expect that to happen. This Vanderbilt team, to me, feels a little different, and I think from a talent perspective, if they play close to the way they're capable of playing, they're going to overwhelm certainly Georgia State and maybe Utah State as well. So, I think they're going to be fine. But I do think, it would be nice to see if you're a Vanderbilt fan. Don't get into Georgia State or Utah State deep into the fourth quarter with the game still we're winning, but it doesn't feel great right now. Get out there and dominate. That should be the expectation for them.
Yeah. No, it'll be disappointing if they don't win handily. And if there's any sort of fourth quarter drama, that's disappointing. And I don't expect it either. I really don't. But, yeah, it is one of those, okay, let's see it. And I'll be interested to see, what the crowds are like, too.
Yeah.
What will the crowds be like? We know, Vanderbilt in recent years, when it's been full because the visiting team brings a ton of people. Is there enough interest now for a game like this to people to just want to come out and watch their team?
Well, I think
I don't know. I'm very interested to see what that turnout will be.
I think the Charleston Southern game was a good sign on that front because there's a lot of people in the building for that one. Now, that was the first game of the year. That was renovations to the new stadium being complete at that point. So you're getting to see it for the first time. So you've seen it at this point. Now, granted, that's the only home game they've played to this point, so now they're back. They're back at it. So, my guess is it's going to be a pretty good crowd. I think there's some real excitement. I think you hit on something earlier that's a big part of it. There's only so much time you've got left. Even though I know that apparently, You know, there's all these reports out there that he may try to play college football forever.
He refuted that down.
But this is it. This is last year for Diego Pavia. There's only a certain amount of time you've got left to watch him there, and I think that matters in this discussion.
Yeah. Yeah, his lawyer is still pushing forward that, but he's done, he says. So so there you go. So this is it.
Five years from now. Like, wow, Diego Pavia is still playing quarterback out there for Vanderbilt. It's amazing.
Dr. Pavia making it work. Big Ed Prez in the YouTube chat says, parody and all that is good for ratings. I'm not a huge college football guy, but since NIL and the transfer portal, I tune in more. Because now the game is legally monetized and a bit more level. That's an interesting point. I don't hear too many people say, I like it more with that. But there are, you know, there are consequences of all these things, and some of them actually can be good.
It's possible. Brandon in Hermitage says, as a Vandy fan, there's not a single fan talking about last year versus Georgia State. I don't really know what that means, but that's good. I mean, what I'm saying is make sure they're not talking about it while the game's going on.
I guarantee your team is talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, of course. So, like, these guys beat us last year. What are we going to do about it? All right? But I do. I disagree with Brandon. I mean, I think some people are like, okay, you want to talk about the difference between this year's team and last year's team? Okay. Let's see it.
Go out there and smoke them.
Exactly. Like, this is – we're past that stuff now. I firmly believe that this Vanderbilt team would handle last year's Vanderbilt team. But, yeah, we still haven't seen a ton of football yet. Bobby says, Vandy's never had a player like Pavia who has raised expectations like no other that I can recall. Cutler was special, but didn't have the surrounding kit. Yeah, Cutler was a talent, and you knew he'd have a shot in the NFL, and he had a nice NFL career. And I don't know what Pavia will do in that way. But like as far as someone who galvanizes a fan base and like face of the program guy who just – I mean –
it's not close.
No.
Yeah.
It's special. So, yeah, take advantage of the time.
615-737-1025, our phone number. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. Teron Davenport will be with us at 8 o'clock. All that ahead, Robbie and Rexroad, 1025 the game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
And I do think this offensive line is built to pound.
Most of their time is spent on grass.
What was the motivation for deciding to eat the grass?
I smoke weed constantly.
Always kind of just tasted a little piece of grass just to change the taste in my mouth.
I didn't say that grass is some magical fountain of youth where, ooh, it's like E.T. Oh, Elliot, ouch.
Titans, need to get some grass.
I smoke weed constantly.
It'd be a lot cooler if you did.
You might want to sing it.
It is that time of the day here on the program, the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad, brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Rise up to better health. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. Joe Rexroad, the floor is yours.
Wow. A lot of grass talk out there.
Bermuda?
Sure. I mean, that's what I was talking about. I like that term, grass. Get some grass, man. Like straight out of like 1971. All right, I'm going to talk today about technology, though. And I guess, first of all, I'll ask, and I know you guys wouldn't be at this point yet because you don't have kids with cell phones, but I'll ask any of the parents out there if you have kids who have phones, do you track them? And if so, how do you track them? I will name names here. We track our children. Here in the Rexroad family, we track our children with Life 360. It is an app. Here it is right here, Life 360. And look, I find it handy. I can look and see where everybody is. It's something that I rely on, and I guess has been, I mean, you kind of feel bad, right? It's like we didn't get tracked at all, and we lived and everything like that, but that's how it is. I mean, I'm not, like, once you start doing it.
Different times.
Yeah, like once you start doing it, it's hard to not do it, okay? So the other night, on Life 360. And I'm going to show you this, Robbie, because this is what happened as a parent. Just tracking the kids, and you know, the freshman up there at Michigan State, got two up there, got the senior, got a freshman. The freshman, here, I'm just going to show you what Life 360 showed us. I'm showing it to Robbie.
That's not good.
It showed Brennan, and it said he was boating. So it said boating on in the Red Cedar River. I mean, it's 11:02 p.m. Do you understand?
Good time for boat ride.
Well, I mean, so basically we're like, so either he's in the river, and by the way, the Red Cedar River is a place where kids have died, or he threw his phone in the river. Is that the best case scenario? Boating.
I mean,
does that not convey like the phone is
moving,
yeah, like floating yeah, in the water,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So let me tell you, absolute, complete, pure, unbridled panic from Katie and me, calling, texting, going nuts. He's not answering. I mean, we had it feels like an hour. It was probably about 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Or what? It might have been a little longer than that. Pure panic, trying to find him, where is all this stuff, you know. Then I call him, and he answers, like, what, you know, what are you talking about? So what happened was that his phone died while he was walking on the bridge over the river.
Oh, okay. All right.
Which is crazy and sucks and sucked. But how does the app tell you boating?
Hey, it took a nice boat ride.
I mean, to me, I'm like, how is it saying that if the phone is not, like, floating in the water? Like, it's
got to be some miles per hour to it, you'd think, in the water there.
So, yeah. So, I don't know. There's other alternatives. I may have to look at them now. But I would ask the people at Life 360, like, you know, if you have a situation where a phone dies – where someone is like near a body of water, the thing should not tell you that they're boating. Like that is like truly, it was a truly terrifying, awful parenting moment. And if anybody has a better idea than Life 360, I'm all ears on this. And also Life 360, like this cannot happen. Like you have to adjust your app. Like, you know, it's incredibly bad luck that the phone would die while on the bridge, okay?
Yes.
But still, then, like, that's not how it should register, right? Am I crazy?
I don't know how the Life 360 app works. I don't know how it registered at all if the phone's off, right? Like, I don't know how there's even a point of registry with the phone being off.
Yeah, exactly.
If it doesn't just say location not found.
And which, again, if that were the case, it's like, okay, the phone died, and you're not going to have a complete...
At least you're not thinking that he's in the water.
Yeah. Now, again, some people would say, well, aren't you glad that, like, at least had his last location? So, right? Like, if something did happen, you can try to find... Yeah.
If it was on land, yes.
Right. Yeah, again, it's just like, at what point... Like, I have seen this before. So, for example, like, we have had a kid who, like, Caroline went, you know, with friends and was on the lake.
Yeah.
And I tracked it. It was like, yeah, boating. Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Boating.
Right?
No, where are they boating?
How
it's 11:02 p.m.
Yeah.
Boat.
Yeah. How is
it? It up. Here they go.
Yeah. Nice little pontoon. Middle of Wednesday night. School night. How does walking ever get confused with boating? Okay. I need to know.
Dennis,
help
says,
me out, people.
Dennis says, you know, Life 360, not completely accurate with location. Every time I look in on my MTSU kid, it shows him in a dumpster next to his class building.
Like, what are you doing in there, man?
Why are you in the dumpster? What are you looking for in there?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like it shows a big circle, and sometimes it looks like the person in question is Yeah, like next door or something. Yeah. But as long, I guess, as long as like the circle is on the building that they're on, then I guess that's close enough.
Right? We do have a vote from John in Nashville of the Find My Apple device app. Just do the Apple. So, I don't know. A lot of people use Life 360 though.
Yeah,
Life 360 is really the one I think I've heard of on this particular situation.
Is there competition? If someone out there is, entrepreneurial. Just saying, and make an app that doesn't say someone's boating when they walk across a bridge. I might be interested in your product. Just saying.
How big's this bridge?
Not that big. It's just like there's a bunch of bridges because like the Red Cedar goes through the campus. You know, it's wow.
615-737-1025. Our Matt, phone number.
Matt says that's what a helicopter parent deserves. Dude, I'm not a helicopter parent, but I mean, just fine. You can say that. That's okay. You say that, but then it's like, okay, well, if we have the technology to track our kids, are we not going to do it?
Yeah.
I really am not trying to be a helicopter parent.
I believe you.
You may be right, Matt.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Teron Davenport will be with us coming up next. We'll look ahead to the Titans and the Colts. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.